Finally on the program today, the writer and former priest, Dr. Paul Collins, has been the man of the hour since the Pope quit. And yes, you probably have heard him in the last 24 hours, but he literally did write the book on Pope Benedict called God's New Man. And we wanted to know two things from Paul Collins that no one else seems to have asked. Do Pope Benedict's strongly orthodox positions actually mean he can do something radical, such as resign? And does the overturning of one precedent by Pope Benedict open the way for a successor to overturn other precedents? Dr. Collins is speaking with producer Noel Debien.
There's an online mag called The Daily Beast, funny name, but Andrew Roberts on it says that as opposed to Queen Elizabeth II, Pope Benedict XVI does not seem to have taken his lifetime appointment from God very seriously. Does he have a point?
I don't think so at all. I think that the greatest act of Benedict XVI's papacy is the fact that he has resigned. He has broken with precedent and he set a new precedent, and that new precedent releases the Pope from having to serve out his term until he dies.
Well, this is where I wanted to go, because if you accept that the Holy Spirit chooses the Pope through a conclave, which is what Catholic children are taught, has the current Pope actually now said, and in an international context, that human reason can and should be at least equal to the mysterious workings of the Spirit, at least at the tag end of a papacy?
Well, even before his own election as Pope, he made it very, very clear that while the Holy Spirit participates somehow or other in the conclave, that doesn't mean that the cardinals don't engage in horse trading. And of course, the reality is that the Holy Spirit works through human means. The Holy Spirit doesn't intervene directly. That's a kind of a fundamentalist pseudo-charismatic notion that somehow or other God is the master manipulator. And it's jolly good that the cardinals get into a bit of horse trading, because that's how human beings work out politics. And let us not for one moment forget that this is politics. The person who is elected as the next pope will have a very considerable role to play in the wider world, in the political, economic, and social world. And we've also got to remember that the papacy, if nothing else, is a very traditionalist organization. It is grounded in things like precedent. It's grounded in the fact that, well, no one's ever done this before, so we can't possibly do it. Benedict has done us an enormous favor by resigning.
It is this precedent I'd really like to focus on, because you've written extensively on papal power. Is there a sense in which that only a deeply intelligent conservative, like a Nixon in China, for example, could take what is in the end quite a radical step?
I think that's an extremely acute observation. I think it's correct. Yes, Benedict is very much a theological conservative, but he is, as you say, a highly intelligent theological conservative. I think that this action stems from his experience of dealing with the long, drawn-out dying of John Paul II.
And the interregnum, as it were, the paralysing of the Vatican.
Exactly. And so he was the person, in a way, closest in terms of the government of the Church to John Paul II. And of course, he would have been aware of the fact that very thoughtful people in the Church, I can remember Giancarlo Zizzola, the Italian commentator, I actually spoke to him about this, the whole issue of modern medicine keeping people alive artificially. I mean, in the old days, the average length of a papacy is about 7.5 years. And of course, popes died regularly for the simple reason that ancient medicine was more likely to kill you than cure you. But the reality now is that modern medicine can keep you alive artificially, so that if we ended up with a pope who was senile, a pope who had dementia, a pope who was so totally incapacitated that he was on a life support machine, who would have the guts to turn the thing off? How would you make those kind of decisions? So what I think Benedict's done, he's freed us up, for the Pope, at least, to be able to make that decision. And any sensible Pope is going to know when he's had it. This is the big favour that Pope Benedict XVI has done for us.
Does it change our understanding of the papacy itself, no longer for the term of his natural life, as it were?
Well, of course, it never was necessarily for the term of his natural life. The clearest papal resignation is that of Pope Celestine V, or Saint Peter Celestine as he's known. Yeah. He was a hermit, and he was brought down from the hills, truly a saintly man, gentle, kind man, and made pope, almost against his own will. He only lasted 6 months. He himself was very doubtful about accepting the office, and he allowed himself to be persuaded by an appalling man who eventually became Pope Boniface VIII, his successor, an absolutely appalling man. Boniface VIII is one of the popes, who, medieval popes, who was truly mad.
I think threw Celestine in jail for good measure to keep him out of the way.
Yes, he did. Yes, poor Celestine resigned, and then, you're quite correct, he was imprisoned. Boniface, of course, himself came to a sticky end, so he got his comeuppance.
Well, it brings me to an obvious question, though, that if this pope lives on, if the rumours, you know, the Roman conspiracy theory rumours of a severe illness are wrong, it seems if this current pope retires and lives longer, can he not become an alternative source of authority, which is what Boniface was worried about with Celestine?
Well, the reality is that I think Ratzinger is a much wiser man than that. He, as we've now discovered, had a pacemaker. The batteries were changed, you know, just recently. But, you know, I know many people with pacemakers and they're fitter than I am. I just think that his strength was starting to wane. He could see that. And he decided that discretion was the better part of valor. I think he will be wise enough to keep out of affairs. I think that he is, there's a kind of a humility, I think. There's a toughness and a determination, and even a streak of nastiness in his personality. I mean, I'm probably one of the few people in Australia who dealt with him being on the wrong side.
Pretty
of
much
fence.
Directly, in fact, yeah.
Yes, I in fact have a letter which is now in the National Library of Australia, which he personally not wrote to me, but to the general of my religious order. But he's a good man, and there's a real humility in him. I think that he will keep out of affairs.
Well, let me, by way of roundup, ask you a question which seems to sit there in front of me. If he can overturn a precedent like this in terms of practice and tradition, if we take into account Celestine and we go back and say that this pope has in fact broken tradition and precedent that's lasted 719 years since Celestine resigned, is it too far to try to join the dots and say that an 800-year-old tradition like clerical celibacy could also come under the hammer when people look at this and say, well, this is new, this is changing of traditional precedent?
Well, of course, you don't even have to change precedent, because there are churches, Eastern churches in union with Rome, who recognise the Pope, who have married priests. The Melkites,
the Maronites,
the Ukrainian Catholics, all of them have married priests.
So it's not novel, you're saying?
So it's simply not a novelty. It could be changed. We wouldn't have to wait till tomorrow. It could be changed today. It's of about the same significance in terms of precedent as the Pope having to last until his last breath. This was simply a rule that was imposed on the Church by Pope Gregory VII in the 1080s in order to break the power of lay control of Church property. I mean, even in the West, we're now admitting married Anglican and married Lutheran former priests and ministers to the priesthood of the Catholic Church, and they remain married. This could be changed today.
Dr. Paul Collins, thanks very much for being part of the Religion and Ethics Report.
Thank you, Noel.
Paul Collins ending this week's edition of the program. And Paul has a new book out called The Birth of the West. Next week, the editor of the influential US magazine First Things talking about the politics of the Vatican under Benedict. At our homepage on the RN website, you'll find all of today's stories, which you can podcast. And the ABC's Religion and Ethics portal also has some excellent and pretty provocative articles on Benedict's resignation. You can leave a comment or you can follow us on Twitter at ABC Religion. Thanks to producer Noel Debien and technical producer Paul Gough. Until then, it's cheers from me, Andrew West.